Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spotless, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 26, Housekeeping for the Apocalypse. Sunday, February 9th, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House, near the Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. This episode contains the following segments: a little bit of learning, ever-expanding skill set, the back porch, and gratitude journal. Show notes can be found on my website, yarns@yinhu.com. You can find the show's Facebook page or follow me on Instagram or Twitter as Sarah Pomegranate. This week I heard from listeners Quilter Carolyn, Carolyn from Kent in the UK, Tandem Sandy, Sandy from Argyll, Scotland, Freed from Pennsylvania, Swen Stia, who is Sarah from Maine, Knitten Wolf, who is Dawn from Lancaster, California, and who is one half of the Wolf Farms video podcast, Stape 25, who is Patty, and Nancy S. Werner from San Francisco. Thank you to everyone who's been in touch with me. For folks who have joined the Ravelry board, liked the show's Facebook page, and for those of you who have sent me personal messages, I really enjoy hearing about your experience of listening to the show. A little bit of learning. This year, I decided to embark on an adventure to purchase more products from the bulk bins at my local health food store, and to try out some recipes using those products. So each month I'm putting a different ingredient in the spotlight, and in February, oats is the ingredient in the spotlight. Last week on episode 25, I talked a little bit about oats in history and culture, and this week I'll talk a little bit more about oats and nutrition information. I think a lot of us are more familiar with health benefits of oats. I mentioned that in the 1980s, the cholesterol-lowering properties of oats were popularized in a number of studies, and products with oats or oatmeal in them had packaging proclaiming heart health, or this is good for your heart, and little icons with hearts on those products. So I wanted to highlight a couple other things about the nutrition information and oats. 1/4 of a cup of dry, unprocessed oats has 150 calories. When prepared, that 1/4 cup of oats has 4 grams of fiber, or 16% of the daily recommended allowance for fiber, and 7 grams of protein, which would be about 13% of the recommended daily intake. Oats have properties like soluble fiber and beta-glucans, which stabilize blood sugar. That's what makes them great to eat at the beginning of the day, because starting off the day with stabilized blood sugar helps you maintain that stabilization throughout the day. Another interesting thing about oats is that they contain over 20 different kinds of polyphenols known together as avenanthramides. And these avenanthramides have antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and anti-itch properties, which is why they are often found in products designed specifically for skin treatment, like lotions and bath additives that help calm inflamed skin. When storing your oats, you should put them in a cool, dry place and for no longer than 2 months. Oats, as I mentioned last week, have a higher fat content than a lot of other grains, and that can cause them to spoil or go rancid if they're stored for too long, if they get too warm, or if they are exposed to sunlight. And that's why they're often sold in a large cardboard tube or container. You can store them in tins. Some people store them in the freezer as well. They're not likely to go bad if you use them up very quickly, but it's also important to know how old they are when you buy them because you don't know how long they've been in the grocery store or supermarket before you take them home. It's best not to have them sitting around too long. It's best to cook with your oats, and that's what I want to talk about this week in the ever-expanding skill set. First, I want to highlight that my friend Christy, who is a certified health coach and who has a blog called Creative Wisdom Wellness, has put up a recipe in her most recent newsletter and on her blog for warm gingery oatmeal. It's delicious. Christy has excellent recipe suggestions. And if you're looking for some warm gingery oatmeal to warm up these cold winter days, I highly recommend her recipe. I have linked to Christy's blog, Creative Wisdom Wellness, in my show notes on yarns@yinhu.com. One of the things that I've talked about with Christy for our ideas in using oats this month is that I would like to experiment with using oats in some savory recipes. And some of the folks on the Ravelry thread were excited about this possibility as well. It's something I hadn't thought about too much because oats and oatmeal, that's always in oatmeal cookies, breakfast foods, granola, that kind of thing. But I was searching around on Epicurious, which is one of my favorite websites to go to for inspiration, and I found a recipe for a fish that was crusted with pinhead oats. That's another term for Scottish oats. And I hope to find them before February is through, but I haven't located them in any of the supermarkets I go to just yet. I will keep working on it. But I wanted to take this idea of using oats as a crust for a fish. So I purchased some salmon and I took about a third of a cup of dry rolled oats from the bulk bins, and I pulsed that just briefly in my food processor so that some of the oats were powdery and floury, and some of the oats were still almost fully formed and had a little bit of texture. I put them in a bowl, and to that I added some salt, some pepper, some cayenne pepper, and some dill. I gave the salmon fillets a squeeze of lemon juice, and then I turned them over and pressed them into that oat mixture to create a kind of a crust. I like to start my salmon in a cast iron pan, but often, no matter how well seasoned my cast iron is, fish can stick in the pan. So what I like to do is take a lemon and thinly slice half the lemon. So I have 4 or 5 rounds of lemon, and I put them in the cast iron pan and then set the salmon fillet on top of that. I let that sizzle for a while, and then I cover the pan, reduce the heat, let it cook for 5 to 7 minutes. It depends on how large and how thick the salmon fillets are. Toward the end of that time, I turn on the broiler in the oven, I remove the cover, and I let those salmon fillets go under the broiler for a couple of minutes until that oatmeal crust is a little bit crunchy but not burned, and it looks cooked through. So the oats steam a little bit and get moist from the heat, the lemon juice, the juices from the fish. They soften up, and then under the broiler, they get crispy and golden. When I serve the salmon fillets, I am very careful to lift up all of those slices of lemon, which are now caramelized and very, very soft, as well as the salmon. So I lift that entire thing onto the plate. And I served it with some roasted cauliflower because that's what I had seen in the Epicurious recipe. And then Samuel and I collaborated on a dish that also incorporated some more oatmeal. We used some Swiss chard that had been sautéed, a diced apple. We tossed that with some gorgonzola cream sauce, and we put that in a baking dish and topped it with a streusel topping, almost like I would make for an apple crumb pie, except I replaced part of the flour for the crumb topping with rolled oats. And we layered that on top and we baked that in the oven. It was a mix between a savory dish and dessert. It almost tasted like we were having dessert for dinner. And maybe it was a little bit of oatmeal overload, but it was a good experiment. And those are two recipes that I now have under my belt for our February Bulk Bins cook-along. The back porch. Well, the Olympics started on Friday night with the opening ceremonies. I think actually some of the events started on Thursday evening, and then the opening ceremonies occurred on Friday evening. And lots and lots and lots of knitters all around the world cast on very special projects for the Ravelinics, or the Knitting Olympics, during which they will attempt to complete some sort of challenging knitting or crocheting or spinning project during the time before the closing ceremonies of the Olympic Games. Sadly, I am not among those knitters. I have a lot of projects going and a lot of things going with work and my National Writing Project work, and it just didn't seem like adding one more thing was a good idea. Luckily, the proprietor of my local yarn shop, Mountain Knits and Purls in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, has a different kind of Olympic contest going on, and that is a contest to complete projects that are in the works. So I did register a few projects, and I hope to make some good progress on those. I will tell you about them if I complete them. Otherwise, I would like to tell you about one project that I worked very quickly on after starting it and completed this week. It is an arrowhead-shaped shawl called The Aggregate by Jimenez Joseph of Jimmy Knits. And for this, I used the Full Moon Farms Fabulous Fibers yarn, which was a sport / DK weight yarn, a 2-ply yarn that I found and purchased right from the dyer at Vogue Knitting Live in New York a few weeks ago. The colors were Caribbean Blue and Honey Mustard. I used a US size 6 4.0 millimeter set of circular needles, and instead of using the wrap and turn method, I employed the double stitch in order to create a mirror effect of short rows. There are two colors in the shawl, and then there is very interesting patterning that creates a mirrored effect. It is much easier to create than it looks. So the effect is somewhat sophisticated, but the actual knitting I found very simple. I did complete an extra portion of the pattern because the Jimmy Knits pattern calls for worsted weight yarn, and I was using a slightly less weighty yarn So in order to have a substantial shawl, I did complete a little bit more of the pattern. And you could just go on and on and keep, I could see how you could create something much larger, just repeating the different parts of the pattern over and over again. This is an excellent pattern to work with color play. I used highly contrasting colors of an aqua blue and a maize sort of yellow. It reminds me a little bit of a beach blanket, even though it's shawl shaped. It's not rectangular in shape, but it has those bright, sunny, beachy kind of coloration to it, which is excellent in this February weather. I think it would be interesting to play with maybe black and white. There are several shawls on Ravelry with very interesting color choices. Another cool thing to do would be to use a gradient type of yarn that has very gradual changes in color and pair that with a black or a white or some other solid color and see how that gradation of color works throughout the shawl. There's one quite stunning example of that on Ravelry. This is a very squishy, soft shawl because it's done in garter stitch. There is no purling. It's quite simple and easy. You could also play around a little bit with the kind of edging you use. This had a simple knit two, yarn over type of edging. You could play around with different kinds of edging. Overall, I am very pleased with the finished project, and I haven't decided whether this is something I'm keeping, something I'm giving away directly, or something I will save for a gift for a later time. Two additional things I would like to mention. One is that I frequent the What Drives You Crazy About Podcasts board on Ravelry because I like to see what people are complaining about and try to avoid that in this podcast. And one thing that was brought up by a frequent podcast listener wasn't really a complaint so much as a really good suggestion. And she said, well, a lot of times I hear about the name of the pattern and the designer at the beginning of a podcaster's conversation, and I don't write it down or really pay that much attention, but then gradually as the podcaster is talking about it or on a video cast, the podcaster is showing it, and then I become interested, and then they never mention the name of the pattern again, and I have to go searching for it. So would you please, please say the name of the pattern and the designer at the beginning and the end of the discussion. What a stellar idea. So I will try to keep that in mind. This, if you have become interested while you're listening, is The Aggregate Shawl by Jimenez Joseph of Jimmy Knits. It is a paid-for pattern, and it's available on Ravelry as a download. The second thing I would like to mention is how to complete the double stitch. And please consider this carefully from a non-expert knitter who's something of a novice. I've only been knitting for a few years when I try to explain a kind of stitch. If you're very curious, it could be worth looking up and watching a video of someone else doing the double stitch, but I will make an attempt. To complete a double stitch, you knit the required number of stitches called for by the pattern. And then instead of doing a wrap and turn, you turn the work, you slip the last stitch from the left needle to the right needle, purlwise, and then you pull the yarn that to do a purl stitch or to slip something purlwise, you have the yarn in front of the work. So you slip it, and then you pull the yarn to the back of the work. And when you pull it quite tightly. So you pull both legs of that stitch up and over your right needle. And then you continue knitting. When you return to any stitch upon which you have completed a double stitch, it looks different than other kinds of stitches. I can see it immediately. In some patterns, it's recommended that you mark a double stitch with a crochet type stitch marker. Those are like little C's. They're open on the ends. You could also use one of those diapy pin stitch markers and just leave it open. But I can see the difference very clearly between any other stitch and a stitch that I've done as double stitch. And what you do when you get to it in your knitting is you just knit two together. So instead of knitting each leg of that double stitch separately, which would create an increase, and you do not want to do that, you want to knit those two legs of the stitch together and maintain your stitch count. I hope that's helpful, and I hope that at least those of you who have been struggling with wraps and turns, or like I did, not really struggling with the wrap and turn, like that wasn't a big deal, but struggling with how to deal with that wrap and turn when I got back to it in the row and trying to conceal it or make it look like it was a natural part of the work. I tried a couple of different methods and really my knitting looked like a sloppy mess. So this double stitch creates a much tidier row. It's very easy for me to see the difference between the kinds of stitches in my knitting and has kind of like a seamless effect when it's knit back into the row. Gratitude journal. This week I am feeling particularly grateful for my mother's influence in terms of my housekeeping or homekeeping abilities. A few episodes ago, I mentioned that the snowy, cold, wintry weather was keeping me from exercising as much as I like to out of doors. And so I had started exploring this alternative of getting my yoga practice going again. When I've done yoga in the past, I have gone to a studio and I've taken classes, or I've done yoga on my porch or otherwise out of doors in the warmer weather. I have never cleared a space in my home for a yoga practice, and I always saw it as a really big challenge and something that was too difficult in the very small space we have at Yin Hu. But over the past few weeks, I've really been reconsidering that. A lot of people talk about spring cleaning, and I believe in winter cleaning because I think especially in the Northeast or anywhere you live with stark seasonal changes, there are times of the year when you can start to get a little bit of cabin fever and start to feel closed in. Here in the Northeast, that happens for me in particular in January and February. The winter holidays have passed. Sometimes there's like residual clutter and new things, gifts that have to be put away, and it can start feeling like the walls are closing in on you. And that's when I recall the teachings of my mother. She had a number of sayings for us growing up that have really stuck with me. And for this podcast episode, I've been thinking about how to turn them from my mother's aphorisms to questions to consider if you're thinking about housekeeping for the apocalypse. Obviously, you want to be ready. Obviously, you want to be prepared. So I'll start with the things my mom used to say, and then I'll talk a little bit about my contemporary updating of those things. One thing I'd like to say before I even start is there is this quote, "A place for everything and everything in its place." It's been attributed to Isabella Beaton, who was the author of Mrs. Beaton's book of household management, which was kind of like a Victorian guide of household management. The quote has also been attributed to Ben Franklin, who was incredibly practical in all of his ways. Likely this quote, a place for everything and everything in its place, came from much earlier, perhaps the 17th century, which would predate both of those individuals. And I think that this idea that everything has to be organized is actually the enemy of good homekeeping. And what I'm grateful for when I think about my mother and her influence is that she did not assert that everything had to be clean and organized. That's not practical. It's overbearing, and it causes a lot of guilt, in my opinion. So where I'm coming from in providing this advice this week is not any kind of a moral high ground, but rather housekeeping or household advice that has as its objective a healthy, relaxed, emotionally stable sort of environment in which we can spend our time. I think that good housekeeping is part of being healthy. And I'll explain why as we go on with this segment. Three sayings from my mom. I don't think these are all original to her, but they're what I remember her saying. If it is clean, it stays clean. Don't put it down, put it away. And cluttered surface, cluttered mind. My mother believed that there was a difference between a mess and clutter. And I think this is an important distinction no matter what kinds of words you put around it. Clutter is unwanted, unhealthy pile up of things that are not being used. Clutter is visually unappealing from an aesthetic standpoint. Clutter can be unhealthy if it collects dust or bacteria or germs or something like that. A mess, however, is a work in progress. A mess is healthy because something is happening, materials are being used, supplies are out, and there is a product in the making. As long as the work on that project is continual, it is not clutter. It is a mess. If a project is started and then it's abandoned and all those materials and all those supplies and tools keep lying around, it becomes clutter. And that would be a problem for my mother. So that's something I try to keep in mind. It's healthy and it's important for us to get messy and get creative and have things around, because if you have to put everything away every time, you'll never make any progress on a project. And this goes for the fiber arts. It also goes for anything else. So it's important to allow space for a mess. It's also important to dispel clutter. In my house growing up, my mother had designated areas that were okay to be messy and areas where it was really important to keep them free of individual people's belongings. Because if someone came over or you wanted to sit down and relax, you didn't want to deal with someone's project lying on the coffee table or something in the middle of the living room. But if you wanted to make a mess in your room, you were perfectly able to do that. If you wanted to make a mess in the kitchen and try cooking something, go right ahead. And when your project was done, then you should clean up your mess. Thinking about housekeeping for the apocalypse and updating some principles of housekeeping to contemporary times, I have a few questions. And one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is that I was sent some personal messages after talking about clearing a space for yoga in my house. And I was asked about some tips for doing this and how I manage it in a small household. So some questions for consideration are, number one, what areas of your home, if better organized, would actually save you time? If you're thinking about rolling up your sleeves and doing some work, start with cleaning or organization where it's really going to save you time. Because if it saves you time, it makes your life better. If you're just organizing to organize or because it's out of guilt or you think having things color-coded or alphabetized is makes you a better person or something, that's not a good use of your time. But if it's going to save you time, it's worth your effort and energy. Also, which areas of your home do you like to use for rest and relaxation? And which areas of your home do you like to use for creation? It's helpful in any area, like your bedroom, maybe a favorite chair by the window, for example, then any area where you really like to rest and relax or you use for restorative purposes, that the area is not only free of clutter, but contains a grouping of maybe some of your favorite objects or things that you like to look at or read through. And you create that kind of comforting environment for yourself. In areas where you like to make a mess, really honor that and make a space for your mess. Have a large table, clear a desktop or a countertop so that you can get messy and have fun creating without all of your other possessions or other aspects of your life getting messed up or mixed up or lost in your creative mess. My mother was a great one for cleaning the kitchen before she started a cooking or baking project. And for our church dinners growing up, I think I mentioned in a previous podcast, we had an extremely small parish. And so we needed to do a lot of fundraising for the church, which came in the form of church dinners. And these were usually baked ham or roast beef church dinners. And the highlight for most of the elder folks who would come and pay for the dinner was to have a home-baked dessert. And my mom would make 15 to 20 pies in one afternoon. This was a magnificent mess. And before she made her mess, she would clean the kitchen. Partly because, you know, she was taking pies and serving them to people she didn't know, so, you know, she didn't have any contaminants. But also because she knew that there was going to be flour and pie dough and a sticky mess everywhere, and she didn't want other things like bills or mail or the telephone to get into that mess. So she would clean and organize, and then she would make her mess. I think it's important for us to honor our creative spirit by having a special place in our home that we can make a mess, that we can experiment with materials. The third and final question to ask yourself if you are embarking on this apocalyptic housekeeping is, what items can be donated, repurposed, or given away so they have a new home? Perhaps one of the most difficult aspects of housekeeping is that we all have perhaps many more things than we really need. Many more possessions, things pile up, and this kind of clutter is not only visual clutter, but it's clutter of the mind. We can feel good about ourselves if we give those things away, or find a home where someone can be really using them or someone needs something that we have. Well, this has been something of a departure for me because I don't think a podcast is a place to be incredibly instructive. But homekeeping is a very passionate topic with me. And since I was asked about it, I thought I would take the time to think through some tips that would be really useful and to encourage housekeeping for the apocalypse. It's a Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is So Wheat, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a modified nature thing. It's a modified nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, but I don't know why. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a modified nature thing. It's a modified nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.